Going to open the Human Services Committee on today, April 13th, 2011. And we have a lot of bills here, and some of them will be carrying over, but we'll take some testimony. Good morning, Representative. I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3434 and close the work session on House Bill 3434. I'm going to open at the public work session on House Bill 2059. We are ready on this one, colleagues. We heard this bill earlier. Representative, thank you for making it. Hi there. Now I can't find my bill. 2059. So, colleagues, I opened a work session on 2059. We carried this over from the 11th. This provides, oh, do tell people, that's your job.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, to refresh your memories, House Bill 2059 provides that monies from a judgment in a settlement agreement for a minor ward in the custody of the Department of Human Services be paid into a trust account or sub-account with the Oregon State Treasury. The accounts are to be established by the department or the Oregon Health Authority for the purposes of receiving awarded money. As you indicated, we had a public hearing on the 4th of April and then it was carried over. From the 11th, we have received fiscal impact statements and revenue impact statements. If the measure on the fiscal impact statement, if the measure is adopted and passed out, there will be no fiscal impact.
Great. So I'm ready to vote on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you'll entertain a motion.
Please do.
We have two members. Any word on that?
Madam
Chair, I move House Bill 2059 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gilliam moves House Bill 2059 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Okay, would you take the roll, please?
Yes. Representative Greenland.
Aye.
Representative Barker.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Absent.
Representative Wyden.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Absent.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Chair Clement.
Aye. The motion passes. We have a carrier who would like to carry this.
Or do you want to put it on the consent calendar?
Sorry? Do you want to put it on the consent calendar? We'll put it on the consent calendar. It really is just sort of a bookkeeping issue. Is that okay?
I don't.
Okay, Representative, you'd like to carry it.
I wouldn't like to carry it, but I don't. I probably won't be the best carrier for it, but I will carry it.
Thank you very much.
Because I just don't think it.
Thank you.
It's a little more technical than that.
Yes. Representative Thompson, we just voted. Would you like to vote on a bill? 2059.
This one.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, I would like to vote yes.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Maybe Representative Thompson could carry this for being late.
That's pretty slick.
It's already been assigned to Representative Widener.
I think Representative Widener can handle it.
I have no support in this committee whatsoever.
With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2059. We will open up the public work session on House Bill 2053.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2053 in its original format directed the Department of Human Services to provide to the Legislative Assembly a racial impact statement for legislative measures impacting child welfare clients in Oregon. Child welfare data about race and ethnicity and require child welfare contractors to use a percentage of their contracted funds from DHS for racial or ethnic populations that is equal to the percentage of the racial or ethnic populations served by the contract. We do have Dash 1 amendments that we've received. It clarifies that the initial intent for Section 3 of the measure by stipulating that when appropriate, DHS may identify race and ethnicity of children that receive child welfare services from an independent contractor, public or private entity, which receive funds for services under a contract with DHS. It requires DHS to purchase culturally specific services from the independent contractor, public or private entity that is under contract with them, in order to provide child welfare services that reflect the racial or ethnic population of the children served. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. A fiscal statement was issued indicating that the measure would have total funds $291,841,000 in total funds for the 2011-13 biennium.
Okay. Chair Gilliam, I'm waiting for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry. That's okay.
As you know, I'm paperless.
Right.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2053, dated 1-28-11.
Chair Gilliam moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments, dated 1-28-11. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, the amendment is adopted. Okay, Chair.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2053 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Chair Gilliam moves House Bill 2053 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Commission on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Seeing none. Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Weiner.
No.
Representative Parrish.
No.
Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
No.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the required majority, right, the bill passes.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask that the rules be suspended so that Representative Parrish can vote on House Bill 2059.
Great. Any objection? All right. Representative Parrish, how do you vote on House Bill 2059?
Thank you. I vote aye.
Great. Terrific. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. So now I hope I close 2053. Open up. Oh, I'm going to be carrying over House Bill 2438.
Representative,
House Bill 3584?
Perfect.
Okay. 35. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 3584.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3584 was originally heard on April 11th. It directs the Department of Human Services in consultation with the Oregon Health Authority to provide training to foster parents regarding appropriate aesthetic care to include care for hair, face, body shape, and type, and skin for children of African American, Hispanic, Native American, Asian American, or multiracial descent. It does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and we've received an impact analysis that has a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. I'm ready for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that House Bill 3584 go to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Chair Gilliam moves House Bill 3580 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Representative.
Yeah, I assume we're passing, and I'm not talking about this bill particularly, but this bill and the last one. I assume we're passing these to Ways and Means because we want to give some priority to them and hope they'll act on them. Is that so?
That's right.
Sending them there indicates
that we're supporting you.
That is some importance.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying. In the past, people who might not have been there in the past, that we often sent bills to Ways and Means to die. That is not our intent. We're trying not to send any bills to Ways and Means that we don't believe have a way of living. So, Representative Widener.
Yeah. This bill I'm up in the air about because I'm not sure if we're going the right way. I had the conversation with Representative Frederick about it actually just a bit ago. I would like to see, even no matter what happens with this, the department start addressing this in the plans with each child when they're putting a child in foster care. I mean, these are medical conditions that we're dealing with here when a person needs a certain type of skin care, hair care, or things like that. And they need to know what a person's using because it could be a change as well. It doesn't have to be an African-American, Native American, or any cultural thing. It could be I don't use Head and Shoulders, but it could be I've used Head and Shoulders my whole life, and then I go someplace else and they have a different hair care product, which causes me to have dandruff or something because my skin's used to the one certain type. So I would like to see our caseworkers start addressing this in a more specific manner in a plan when they're placing a foster child into a home. So with that being on the record, I probably will be supporting this just because I want to raise some sort of concern or awareness about this.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Representative.
Thank you. I struggle with bills like this, too, because they come about not because they come about because we have a member who brings an issue forward because someone's not doing their job. I mean, essentially, these types of bills, and we're hearing them and we're spending time on them, is because somebody out there at an agency level, caseworker level, you know, in this case, you know, we heard the boy who said he begged a foster parent that we're paying to care for them, and he had to beg them to get something that he needs, and we direct money to that family. I have a problem when we're just writing bills to solve problems that should be addressed, and we shouldn't have to give somebody the authority to solve a problem for a kid. It bugs me. I'm going to vote yes for this bill, but I'd like to start seeing us, if we're going to do things like this, that we actually write bills that have teeth in them, and we start holding people accountable to do the right thing instead of writing a bunch of legislation to solve problems that should have been addressed, without us having to write a law for it. Do the right thing.
Any other discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just a quick clarification.
Yes.
I'm sure it was me, but I want to be sure it's on the record that we are talking about House Bill 3584.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yes. So I will entertain a motion. Or did we all
agree?
Yes.
It's on the floor. It's on the table.
It's on the table. Thank you. Okay. Chair Gilliam moves House Bill 3584 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. So please take the roll.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Barber.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative
White. Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Committee. We're going to have a public hearing on. Let's see.
Thank you.
Is that the song today? What song is that?
Okay. I'm going to open. Did you want to
please
imitate a song?
Carry yourself.
The screen?
You belong to me. That's what it is.
Okay. So we're going to open up a public hearing. And can I work, open a work session at the same time? Okay, open up a public hearing, close a public hearing, open up the work session on House Bill 3086.
What? 3086?
Correct.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3086 directs the Department of Human Services to provide a racial impact statement for legislative measures impacting child welfare clients in Oregon. Child welfare data about race and ethnicity of children in foster care system compared to the general population and requires child welfare contractors to use a percentage of their contracted funds from DHS for racial or ethnic populations that is equal to the percentage of the racial or ethnic population served by the contract. This, we're adding a referral to rules for this at the request of the co-speakers. So
great. And the reason we're sending it to rules is that rules will continue through the rest of the session, and we will conclude our hearing next week, or our work sessions. So we're sending it to rules so that they can work on this more. It's a pretty extensive piece of legislation. With that, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 3086 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Gilliam moves House Bill 3086 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Any discussion? Representative Whitener.
I kind of question how much rules will work this bill when rules has tons of bills in front of it. But
it's true. Yes, Representative.
How does 2053, which essentially directs the same department to do impact studies, not have a fiscal? This had a fiscal, and this one doesn't. Requires preparation of impact studies. I'm assuming there's a cost there in both bills, and I just don't understand how one has a fiscal and one doesn't.
They actually both, 2053 and 3086 are similar bills, and actually they both had a fiscal impact statement. This one they've specifically requested, although it's similar language to 2053, this one they specifically want to do additional work and rework in the Rules Committee. But both do have a fiscal statement that was issued on them.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate any and all questions and discussion on these bills because I am not the most articulate defender of the system that we are under and the reasons we send things down. The only thing I would add, and I intend to vote for sending this to rules, is that we have tried, by we I mean the two co-chairs, have tried to stay in conversation and communication with the co-chairs on the corresponding committees, including our counterpart with Ways and Means, the Human Services sub, and with rules. That is not necessarily a reason to do these things, but I do want you to know that we are trying to coordinate with other co-chairs on these bills. We have done so on this bill, and it's one of the reasons that I am willing to send it on down.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right. We will take the roll, please, ma'am.
Representative Wider.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair
Gilliam.
Aye.
Chair
Greenlee. Aye. This motion passes and the measure is sent to the Committee on Rules. Thank you. And so we close the work session on House Bill 3086. Okay, I'm going to open up. Do we have anybody? Is anybody signed up for 2235? My intent is to carry this over again. I'm sorry. Would you want to speak on it, or can we just hold it over? Okay, if you don't mind. Thank you. Okay. So I will close the work session on, open a public hearing on 2235 and close the work session on 2235. Open up a work session on 2235, and we are going to carry this over. Do I need to do anything more?
You can just say you're carrying it over.
Carrying it over. Okay, thank you.
Do you want to be times sustainable receipt changes in the name? I don't think it's here.
Yeah, I haven't shuffled the deck chairs that much, but. Okay, we're going to skip over one, and is Representative Kotek here? Okay, we'll open up a work session on House Bill 3260, and colleagues, oh, we're going to carry this over, right, Representative? Is this that you want to carry this over, 3260?
The runway on the chute?
Yes.
Yes, I think you're carrying it over to the AP.
Pardon?
Yes.
Okay. We'll carry over House Bill 3260, so I'll close that work session. Okay. Now, 3256.
Did we do 3570? I'm sorry. Did I just?
We're skipping over that for the moment. Okay, thank you. So we're looking at 3256. So are we ready to move? We're ready to move that one, right? Right?
Okay.
Yes. Open up a work session on House Bill 3256. Go ahead. Yes, please.
Hey, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3256 in its original form changes the membership of the State Commission on Children and Families to 13 members appointed by the governor. It additionally modifies the membership makeup to add five ex officio non-voting members. It charges State Commission with promoting best practices at state and local levels to prevent child abuse and neglect and juvenile crime. It directs the State Commission to develop and administer competitive grants to local commissions to prevent child abuse and neglect and juvenile crimes. It directs the State Commission to develop performance measures and outcomes. It requires the governor to appoint, subject to Senate confirmation, a director of the State Commission on Children and Families. It limits the State Commission's personnel budget to 10% of the total commission budget unless otherwise approved by the commission. It requires the commission to report to the governor and legislative assembly on or before October 1 of each odd-numbered year, and the report shall include performance measure progress and outcomes developed, proposed solutions to barriers, and proposed prioritization of federal and state resources to implement identified solutions. We do have a dash one amendment. The amendment modifies the provision deleting language that the State Commission administer competitive grants to local commissions, rather adding language that they administer funding through performance-based contracts with local commissions. We have added a referral to ways and means relative to this bill. And the fiscal and revenue impact statements have been issued.
Thank you. Representative Kotek?
Yes.
There you are.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. Good to see you all again. House Bill 3256, as if you recall from last week, was an attempt over interim conversations to put some more focus and sideboards on the State Commission on Children and Families as it currently sits. And there was commentary from Representative Thompson about the concern on page 2 of the bill, line 45, talking about changing to the funding to the local commissions based on competitive grants. And I think that was a very valid point. So the dash one amendment really gets to what the intent was, which is talking about funding through performance-based contracting. So if the committee was so interested in moving the bill just as it sits with that amendment, I think it would get to that concern, because I would like you to have comfort level if you move it on to Ways and Means. And I think this was the one thing that I've heard about, sounds the other conversation about the more system changes. But as the bill sits itself, this was the one concern I heard. Dash one addresses it. So thank you, Madam Chair.
But if we deal with the dash one, we've got to wait for a fiscal, is that correct? Or
no.
Do we have the fiscal on
Madam
the dash
Chair,
one?
We received
so,
a fiscal. It's
okay,
ready
so
move.
We can adopt the dash one,
mm-hmm.
And we have the fiscal, and so we could move the bill. Is that, am I correct?
You are correct.
Okay, thank you. Representative Thompson.
I think President Kotek did a wonderful job.
Great.
My only concern was addressed. And
terrific. Okay. So, any other questions of Representative Kotek?
Yes.
Can you just refresh my mind? Is this the bill that came up last week that Representative Boone came up with you?
Correct. Madam Chair and Representative Parrish. So, you're right. This is the bill that I testified on last week saying, while the intent around this was if the State Commission on Children and Families continues to exist into the next biennium, as it sits now structurally not involved with the Early Learning Council, this bill would put some more focus on abuse and neglect and prevention, currently what they're doing, but add more focus. I think Representative Boone was responding to the additional testimony I gave, which said, I'm not sure if we still need this bill because I'm not sure where the State Commission is going, and I think she was responding more to that. So I know it's a little confusing because I hadn't heard other feedback other than the grant aspect on the bill as it sits. The broader conversation of the budget and the State Commission and the Early Learning Council is not really in this bill as it sits now. I don't have amendments other than the one you have. So,
follow up?
You know, I did talk to Representative Boone a little bit afterwards. And I just want to make sure that her concern is addressed. I mean, I think she was worried that this bill would kind of hurt the boots on the ground type programs that are happening out in counties and cities around the state. Does this do that in your mind? Because that was her concern, and I want to
Sure
we're paying attention to that.
Madam Chair and Representative Parrish, as the bill sits with the dash one, I don't believe so. It leaves the local commissions in place. It restructures somewhat the State Commission to give it more of a focus on abuse, neglect, and juvenile crime prevention, which are existing funding streams in the Commission. As it sits, if you made the dash one, I don't think it does.
I saw Representative Boone this morning. She knew this was on the agenda, and she didn't express any concerns to me, so I assume she's okay with this.
Thank you for the
thanks
question.
Thanks for asking the question. Any further questions? All right. Anything
can I ask a question?
Please, Representative Greenlee.
I've been sitting listening to all the budget problems around this. Are we going to end up having a state agency when we're done?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, I don't know. The way I'm addressing all the budget challenges right now is I'm trying to keep all of our options open. I think if we continue to fund the State Commission at whatever level, because I do think there'll be reductions no matter what agency you are, I do think we have to help provide them a little more focus because I think their mission has gotten rather broadly. And again, this was an interim conversation of how do you do everything you're being asked to do with the State Commission and the local commissions with limited, you know, more constrained resources. And so this was an attempt to say, really focus on these things. And you'll see that some reporting has been taken out, you know, trying to skinny down what they're being asked to do in statute to kind of respond to the fact they might have less resources. Now, the broader question of whether we still have a state commission or how the local commissions would function, the Early Learning Council, is not going to happen in this bill. It's probably going to happen somewhere else. I don't know the answer to that question. I think a lot of these things won't be really determined until end of May, depending on resources.
Funny, I was sure you knew the answer to that. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that it's an important issue that we're dealing with under the funding things, but I think the notion that narrowing the job, if the job stays there, is very useful under this.
Thank you.
Yes. One of the important things about this bill is it recognizes that the county commissions on children and family are not necessarily or are not organically connected to the state commission on children and families. They're doing different things. You know, there's differences from county to county, but overall, you know, whatever we do with the state commission should be considered separate from whatever we do with the county commissions. And that was not real clear in the original, you know, in some of the comments that came to me originally about the state commission discussion was we pull the handle, the state commission's gone, and so are all the county commissions. But no, that's certainly not necessary, nor is it advisable when you look at the work of some of the county commissions. So it's this kind of clarifies that separation. And Mr. Kotek is right. You know, separating everything out does not mean perpetual funding at whatever level, but you know, it at least gets that separation going, and we have further discussions then down the road.
Madam Chair, thank you. If I may, I also forget, and there's one aspect in here that we haven't really talked about, which there is an administrative cap both for the state commission and the local commissions in this bill. It says 15%, no more than 15% should be spent on administration at the state level and no more than 10% at the local level, or vice versa. I can't remember which one it is. But this was really a budgetary exercise in the sense that if we're going to make sure the maximum amount of dollars are flowing to the services directly to children and families, we have to think about, you know, really constraining our administrative overhead, similar to what nonprofits do.
Good. All right. I think we will move
Thank
on.
You.
Thank you very much, Representative Cotet. So, Representative, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the -1 amendments to this bill, House Bill 3256, dated 4/8/11.
Chair Gilliam moves to adopt the -1 amendment, dated 4/8/11. Is there any discussion? All right. Any objection? If not, the amendment is adopted. All right, Representative.
So, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3256 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Gilliam moves House Bill 3256 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion?
I'll just say a brief word, if I might,
please.
Madam Chair. First of all, I want to thank Representative Kotek for her work and her flexibility and, I would say, responsiveness. All of us are concerned about these issues. I particularly am happy that Vice Chair Thompson is comfortable because of his lead on this issue. I am a little worried about his wording regarding organic. Kind of makes me nervous, but I think other than that, and that we're going to have more discussions because we have two other bills related to this subject.
Yes.
So I won't make a long speech here, but just to say, Representative Kotek and all my colleagues, I know people don't come into your office asking to cut your budgets, but I get pretty defensive about this one because of the county we share, Clackamas, because of what I know from Representative Thompson and what they're doing in Polk County, and especially because of what they're doing in my county, in Marion County. So I am looking forward to more discussions about the importance of what they're already doing for our children and our families, and we will get to that. And I'm not discounting anybody else's county that's on this panel, but I am very excited about defending our local commissions because of what they do. So I'll end it there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, could you take the roll, please, Matt?
Representative Greenlee?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Thoman?
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
A lot of traffic on that road to Ways and Means.
Sorry? Okay. A lot of traffic.
Oh, yeah, right. I know that. Okay. Is Representative Gelser here? Okay. She wanted to speak on House Bill 2464, so we'll hold that over.
Actually, Madam Chair, she has to speak.
Terrific. All right. We will open up the public or the work session on House Bill 2464.
Do you have a sworn statement from Representative?
You're so trusting. Good morning again. Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. House Bill 2464, I believe. Do you have the -1 amendments?
Yes.
So I've been chatting with Representative Gelser. This is a bill I know she's been working on for several sessions now when I was first in this committee. This is about pursuing a Medicaid waiver to work with families who are not currently Medicaid eligible but have children with disabilities and who are also currently privately insured but need some wraparound additional support. And so the waiver would allow the state to pursue providing wraparound health services to these families and draw down a Medicaid match. There's no fiscal yet ready. The -1s you have will have to wait, so hopefully you'll be able to hold this over. The reason I'm interested is that we're looking at a series of reductions in the services currently provided to children and adults with developmental disabilities. And I look at this as having one more tool in our toolbox in Ways and Means, because if we end up, for example, cutting the Family Support Program, which is currently on the reduction list, and we were able to pursue this waiver, perhaps spending a little money to draw down federal Medicaid match to help some of those families. It might be worth doing. So this is just the way to maybe mitigate some issues in the DD budget by utilizing Medicaid match. So hopefully the Dash Ones will come back with a fiscal that really reflects what the Dash One is about, and you'll be feeling generous again and sending it on to the Road to Ways and Means so we have another option to balance the budget. So thank
Great.
You.
Thank you, Representative Kosoff. Any quick questions of Representative? Okay,
thank you.
With that, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2464. We'll carry that over. And Representative Thompson is going to talk on Dash 1, 5, 3, 2. But we don't have the.
We can't move it, but he can explain it.
Sure thing. Okay. I think that since we're going to. So we're going to be carrying over House Bill 3037. Representative Cowan is here. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3037. Representative Cowan, thank you for standing up.
3037.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry you didn't realize I was here.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I the last information I have is I think that we are ready to go on House Bill 3037, but perhaps I'm missing something. There was a pending amendment, Dash 3. Do you have that available?
Well, some of us don't. I don't seem to have it. Do you have it, Representative?
Madam Chair, some of us, we don't all have the committee on the Dash 3s, and we don't have the fiscals yet on the Dash 3s in order to be able to move them. The only fiscals we have received are on the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s.
Did you have a fiscal, Representative?
No, it's not my amendment.
Okay.
No.
Did you get a fiscal?
I don't know. But I can review for you the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s, which are separate issues,
sure, go ahead.
You could perhaps
sure.
move those at least
great.
Today.
Okay, go ahead.
Maybe we could begin progression on this. I guess I do have a copy of the Dash 3s.
You do?
Here, okay. Yes. I believe it was Representative Gilliam. I believe that's what your office delivered to me.
Actually, I did. I wish I had people to do that.
So perhaps someone else can speak to that one.
Okay. Well, let's speak
okay,
to these.
Sure. Why don't you speak to the Dash 1s and 2s?
Well, just a reminder of where we are. House Bill 3037, again, is a policy-only bill with no fiscal implications that would help modernize the Oregon Project Independence statute and bring us in line with the current philosophy on aging and long-term care, community-based long-term care issues. It essentially outlines the five primary areas that we have tried to focus on in conversations with all of the stakeholders over 2 or 3 years of work on these issues around focusing on home care and supportive services, support for community caregivers and natural support systems, options, counseling to help individuals make cost-effective choices. Transportation services and chronic health, chronic disease management. I'm sorry, I couldn't find that one.
Representative, so, could I stop you just for a second? I was just told by staff if you apparently. Representative Gilliam doesn't have the Dash 3, nor do I, nor does staff. If you have one, I can have staff.
It came from Representative
Gilliam. We will make copies. That would be great.
I've got copies coming.
Oh.
I just called.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
Sorry. I was just going to tell you that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt.
So, as we have worked through this process and tried to clarify and alleviate concerns that were raised along the way, the dash ones before you are a very simple amendment that simply addressed page one of the printed bill, line eight, and restores the bracketed material so that it reads, an organization designated by the Department of Human Services as an area agency on aging. The AAAs wanted to make sure that we didn't lose that terminology. So that's all the dash ones do.
Okay.
The dash twos address an area of concern that was raised by individuals. It was the section of the bill that I mentioned in the opening statement that could have differences of opinion regarding whether the part of an individual's asset base when determining eligibility for in-home care services, whether the value of one's home ownership should be considered in that whole picture, the equity, if you will, in a home. I understand that there are differences of opinion on that subject, and it's probably a conversation for another day. So the dash twos restore the current language and remove that consideration from this bill. The dash threes, my understanding is that the goal is to make, in those five areas of addressing community-based long-term care issues, was to state that the funds appropriated for Oregon Project Independence shall be expended on home care services, and then to leave the other four categories in a permissive category may be included. I think that the only statement that I would like to make on that is that many people think of Oregon Project Independence as only being in-home care services, and that is not correct. It's a broader array of services that includes case management and does in fact include these other kinds of issues in terms of helping people make good decisions and support existing caregivers. Let's remember that far and away the largest amount of care that's delivered to individuals in a community-based setting are the natural caregiver networks of family and friends in the community. So I wanted to be certain that that amendment didn't adversely impact what the area agencies on aging are currently doing and impact that case management role that they have in any way. They have said that they don't believe that that would be a problem. Nicole was, Palmateer Armstrong was here a few minutes ago but had to leave for a few minutes, and she confirmed that via email for me this morning. I see, frankly, the dash threes as being unnecessary, but if they're important to someone, it's the committee's decision.
And there's no referral to Ways and Means.
There is not, because there is no fiscal impact on this bill. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Because the other thing that we will correct in Legislative Council when we get some amendments processing so that we do an engrossed version of the bill will be in the summary statement that says that it expands services provided to seniors through Oregon Project Independence. That really is a misstatement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This modernizes the language and will only expand what we do as those opportunities present themselves. So that's really a parallel course elsewhere. That conversation is going on. This bill is only a policy bill and should have no fiscal impact.
Thank you. I think what I'm going to do, colleagues, unless somebody has a better idea, is close the public work session now. If we can get those dash three amendments and everybody has a chance to see them, maybe they're coming. Why don't we have those distributed, and I will come back and we can talk about the amendments and if we want to pass it.
I don't know if we've got all our paperwork, even if we wanted to. Hmm? Correct.
Oh, because we need a fiscal.
We need the fiscal on the dash three.
I won't take, may I, for just a moment?
Yes, of course.
I'm sorry that everybody didn't have a chance. We've all been through this before in committees. Representative Riley's been through this, but he's a quick reader, so he doesn't have any problem with it. I'll just say this. Please take time to look at these before the next meeting, if you can, and we can discuss them in depth. We're not going to move this today. Okay. Will you forgive me, Representative Cowan? We're not discussing, I was in and out of here, we're not discussing any dash ones. We're discussing, for lack of a better way to say it, your twos and my threes. Is that correct? Did I miss something?
Co-Chair Gilliam, no, I'm sorry, that is not quite correct. We are discussing the dash ones and the dash twos, which are mine. The dash one is a simple restoration of the terms Area Agency on Aging in the first part of the bill. The dash twos remove the consideration of the home as an asset. The dash threes are yours, and I don't know if you heard my overly simplified explanation of what I think they do, but if I was incorrect, you can let me know.
No, I'm sure you weren't. So, Madam Chair, it is complicated, and yet I think we're getting to a place. I appreciate everybody on the committee, and I certainly appreciate Representative Cowan working through and being flexible. I believe we can get, I'll call it an OPI bill that we all are proud of. We just need a little more time.
Right.
And in the meantime,
what do the threes do?
Let's have that discussion later, and everybody can have a chance to look at them, and we'll discuss them at the next meeting.
I can just say
that. How about answering the question? In the meantime, we're going to look at them after I hear the answer to the question.
I can be very brief if you
Thank
want
you.
Me to. You know, the simple explanation is it prioritizes, it asks them to prioritize the services. And you'll see it in a minute.
Thank you.
I think it's an important distinction, and I think it'll help move the bill.
Okay. With that, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 3037, and we hope to have it at the next meeting to hear this, have a work session, and hopefully pass.
Thank you very
the
much.
Bill. Thank you for all the work you've put on this, Representative. Didn't I say carrying it over?
Hope is a good word.
She said it earlier.
Pardon? I will be carrying this bill over. Thank you. Okay. We have, do we have any people signed up for 2049, Matt? Oh. It's scheduled for a public hearing, so I think I need to have a public hearing. Somebody said it's due. Yeah. Okay.
Does she not want
to
meet today?
No. No. We're going to have a public hearing. We're going to vote on it today. Okay. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2049. Go ahead.
Hello,
Jennifer
again. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. Thank you for your indulgence this morning. House Bill 2049 is an agency bill that was set up knowing that we would have to make some statutory changes to our Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program because of budgetary reasons. There are no amendments to the bill as of yet, and I apologize for the delay. I think we're in a very unique situation this session. Ideally, we would have had more opportunity to have a more robust conversation in the policy committee about the choices we're going to have to make around that budget. Hopefully, before you close up, we'll be back with some of those ideas. The co-chairs of the Human Services Subcommittee are still debating what kind of statutory changes we're going to need, whether or not we will want to push forward with an elimination of the 60-month time limit to an 18-month time limit with very limited exemptions, whether or not we want to suspend portions of the current statute with the idea that if we make it through the next biennium and the caseload stabilizes, that we'd want to come back to some of the design elements that are currently in statute. There are some other changes around engagement that we probably will have to make. So I know there's some folks here to testify today, but just so you know, we'll be back hopefully with some more clarity on 2049 that you'll get a chance to discuss before moving it on to Ways and Means. So thank you for your patience. We just have a lot to discuss yet.
Thank you. We won't be voting on this, colleagues. We're going to hold this over until we get more information.
Now, what about our folks that are in the room?
Nobody else is. Oh, Mickey Cerise.
Other than that,
nobody else is. Thank you, Mickey, for coming.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mickey Cerise. Work with the Department of Human Services in children, adults, and families. And Representative Kotek did an excellent job of explaining what this bill does. It's a placeholder for the department, and I just wanted to get on record that the department supports the bill.
So thank you
so
much.
Answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Cerise?
Thank you for coming. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2039, and we will carry over the work session. Are we moving on?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next we have a public hearing on House Bill 2325. Jennifer. Why don't you read this, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2325 in its original form modified elder abuse investigation procedures where suspicious injury exists. You do have -2 amendments that were sent out to you yesterday that in essence are replace the original measure. They're a gut and staff amendment.
Okay. Thank you. And we have four people to speak. Representative Riley, could we speak? We're going to stand at ease for a few minutes.
session. We're going to close this momentarily, so we'll have plenty of time for that. What else do I need? Okay, I'm going to close, open the work session
on
3570. Colleagues, we have 23 pages of amendments, the dash 5 amendment on 3570, so I'm going to hold that over until next week, so it'll give everybody a chance to look at those 23 pages. I think we just got those this morning. So we'll carry that over, that work session over until next week. That's 3570. So that's done. Yes. So I'm going to open up a public hearing. How many people are signed up for 2375 before I open that up?
I'd like to testify.
Of course.
I haven't signed any.
Yeah, of course.
So four.
Four?
Including the December grant.
Okay, I'm going to hold off on that one. Four. So, Representative, what was the one that
3102 is Representative Thompson.
Okay.
If you want to just open that,
sure.
We can talk about the
Okay, I'm going to open up the work session on 3102, Representative Thompson. Would you talk to us about is your dash 5 amendments are yours, right?
Okay. This is the bill, remember, we talked about earlier that's trying to find a home for the CASA program.
Right.
Which was it's an ongoing recommendation from the State Commission on Children and Families and exacerbated by we don't know what we're going to do with the State Commission on Children and Families. So this parcels that out. There are two amendments before you. One is to create, dash fours are to create an interim legislative committee to further study where CASA's permanent home is going to be. And in the meantime, the budget will be transferred to DAS for administration. The dash fives, which are my preference, is to create an independent commission within the judiciary branch, which is modeled after the Public Defense Services Commission. That board's purpose would be to direct, from the bill, to direct and ensure the provision of appropriately qualified and trained court-appointed special advocate services to assist the courts of this state. And then it has sideboards. The thing that probably is the biggest change is it would be appointing a 7-member board, two being directors of local CASA agencies, two being members of the judiciary, three being laypersons having backgrounds in or involvement within the juvenile justice system or juvenile issues, and appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So it would set up a separate structure. The funding for that, it will have a fiscal. The funding is envisioned coming from the state appropriation that goes to CASA. So it would lower their working capital from the appropriation. And, of course, the way appropriations are going this time, it may be lowered anyway. But it would then give them the opportunity to apply for grants and accept gifts, which should rebuild their budget. So it's the additional funding impact wouldn't be there.
Great. Thank you so much for doing this. Any questions of Representative Thompson? Representative Widener.
Actually, kind of a question comment, but I appreciate Representative Thompson's work on this because it's something we need to address and find a permanent home for our CASAs, because lots of times we're running into where the children, we don't have advocates for them, and their rights are the ones left behind at the sacrifice of adults who aren't ready to care for them. So I want to thank him for continuing this journey.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions or comments? All right. With that. Oh, sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. I really am enjoying working with Representative Thompson on this issue. I know he discussed the dash fives. Do you also have a copy of the dash fours?
Mm-hmm.
Again, getting back to my earlier comments about multiple choices, multiple methods of doing things, I think we have two choices here, and I think they have pros and cons both. So, and I know we were talking about the dash fives as setting up a permanent structure in the judicial department, to more of a formal structure for CASAs. And again, over the interim, there was discussion of, you know, what's a good home for the CASAs from a state perspective and from a supportive network, you know, supporting the entire state. The Dash 4s take a little different tact. They say, we're not quite sure what we want. And so it's maybe kind of like a baby step. It says, let's have DAS hold the money. Let's set up a task force. I know that if you ask the CASA network, the network of directors, they might lean toward the Dash 4s because I think they're still trying to keep all their options open. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with the Dash 5s either. I just want to make sure that you have a lot of options in front of you. You can either take a kind of a baby step and say, okay, let's hold on to the money, have DAS hold on to the money, let's have a task force and maybe really know for sure where we want to go next. Or I think also the judicial department is a perfectly good place too, and you have a more formal structure set up right away with the Dash 5. So just options for the committee.
If I understated that, I didn't mean to. I mean, she's absolutely right. The one choice is to do an interim study. The other is to move ahead with a concrete plan.
Yes.
Both have their advocates and detractors.
Okay, thank you.
About choices.
And I think both go to Ways and Means.
Either one would go to Ways and
Means. Yes, right. Yeah.
Representative Greenland.
Thank you. There was an interim process. Did the interim process come to the conclusion that the judiciary is the answer? I mean, are we going to do another interim process if we already did one? And did it come to a conclusion?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlake, the Blue Ribbon Task Force that came out of a budget note that the State Commission convened stakeholders to look at various aspects of the State Commission system, they did talk about CASAs. They said it's probably time for that part of the network to be free and find its own way in the world, whether that was, you know, sending money directly to a network entity or setting up somewhere else. They were not clear on where. It was more like they've matured to the point where perhaps CASAs don't need to be in the State Commission, and it was left kind of as an open-ended question. But now I think with the budget and potentially where the network of State Commissions are going, you know, I think it's kind of expedited the discussion more than people anticipated when that report came out.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions or comments?
We don't have fiscals either, I understand.
On neither amendment.
Right, so.
And we'll get fiscals on both amendments so
right.
We can have an option
right.
There. Representative Widener.
If I may, when we're looking into this, since we have a couple Ways and Means folks here, one of the things we need to look at, too, with our CASAs is when we're dispersing the funds, doing it appropriately to the caseloads in the different counties as well, so in different districts, because the way I understand it right now, it's broken up pretty evenly, and you have some CASAs that are areas that are receiving a lot of funds that don't have as many caseloads as another area. So something to look at when we're putting together the CASA budget and the Ways and Means side. So just want to put that on the record.
Okay, thank you very much. And with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3102.
A work session
on 3102, and we'll be waiting for the fiscals. And Representative Greenlake, I think we're going to open up House Bill 2375, public hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2375 removes the prohibition against healthcare representatives admitting principals for the treatment of mental illness. This is the first hearing on this measure. We have received the revenue and fiscal impact statements indicating that there is no expenditure impact.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Greenlake.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'd say Representative Mitch Greenlake, House District 33. During the 2009 session, we got a bill in the health care committee that came about because of this circumstance. A married couple had signed advance directives, health care representative forms for each other, and one of the two needed admission to a hospital because of some behavioral effects of cognitive impairment. It was deemed that their healthcare power of attorney or the representative to make the healthcare decisions didn't allow the one spouse to admit the other spouse to the hospital because that was deemed admission to or retention to a healthcare facility for care of treatment of mental illness. which is one of a set of five exclusions that are not allowed when one signs a authority for their spouse or for another representative to make health care decisions. In that case, it required the one spouse going to court and getting guardianship over the other spouse in order to allow them to make the decision to admit that spouse to a hospital, which turned out to be a relatively short-term admission to a hospital. So the hospital folks came to the health care committee and with a suggestion that was a kind of clunky solution to the short-term problem, and it was to define behavioral effects of cognitive impairment as not a treatment for mental illness. I mean, it's a completely crazy thing to do. I mean, it struck me that this is a matter of individual freedom. We created landmark legislation. We were very early in the country creating landmark legislation that allowed an individual to hand over the decision on health care on health care treatment to another individual to make sure their rights are respected. At the time of our landmark legislation, which comes in 127.500 series in 127, there were six conditions that were automatically excluded from that healthcare power of attorney. One was admission to or retention in the healthcare facility for care or treatment of mental illness. The second was convulsive treatment, electroshock therapy, psychosurgery, sterilization, abortion, and withholding of life-sustaining procedures except under a set of circumstances that are very clearly specified. All this bill does is delete that one exclusion, admission to or retention in the healthcare facility for treatment of mental illness. So when I give Harriet the authority to end my life and to do and to make any other decision, it also gives her that terrible authority to allow me, and this is one I want to be careful with, to allow me to be admitted to a psychiatric institution. But it just seems so obvious that it ought to happen. There is, in addition, we had a bill before us, and I carried an amendment to it on the floor, on a mental health power of attorney. This in no way affects that statute, which defines how a person with a mental illness can make decisions about their care when they're not capable of making their own decisions. It doesn't affect that at all. All it affects is the general health care power of attorney that I hope all of us have signed to give somebody else the authority to make health care decisions for them, including the decision to admit them for psychiatric care if that's what they need.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions, Representative Greenleck? All right. Thank you very much.
Is Harriet behind this bill? Or?
I'm going to exclude that.
We have Becky Child, Bob Joondef, and Mary Jaeger. Good morning.
Good morning.
And if you're thrilled.
My name is Becky Child. I'm the Executive Director of Mental Health America of Oregon. Our board has not taken a position on this bill, and we do have some concerns about it. And our suggestion is that we put this into a work group. We're not unsympathetic to the situation that Representative Greenleaf described. However, we do have concerns of dating from problems in the past of abuse of people being retained in psychiatric institutions against their will. And so that is our position on the bill right now, is that we don't have a position except that we would ask that we be put into a work group for people can come to some consensus and common understanding.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Joondef. I'm the Director of Disability Rights Oregon. And sitting before you, I want to confess that I'm old enough that I was around when the original health care directive legislation was passed and the declaration for mental health treatment as well. And so I've been through a lot of those discussions and debates. And I want to thank Representative Greenleg for bringing this bill forward, because I think this is an important bill in that it captures the question of, should we be treating mental health treatment as different than other types of health treatment? And I would agree with Representative Greenleg that we should not in a perfect world. Unfortunately, the public perception hasn't quite caught up with some of our aspirations in this area. And so I think we need to take those seriously. And so, and this is reflected in the fact that we do have different standards in terms of our declaration for mental health treatment, which is an advanced directive just for those treatments, and advanced directives for health care. The concerns that I have about this bill, in fact, I would support this bill if I did not have the following concerns, and I'll just lay them out for you. And the first is that people who have used the advanced directive since its inception did not know, and obviously could not have been informed by their attorney if they consulted one, that this did cover inpatient psychiatric care. And whether that individual would want it to cover inpatient psychiatric care or not, of course, we don't know in all those situations. But right now, as the bill stands, it doesn't address people who have in the past executed documents. It doesn't address the question of whether this provision would be retroactive or just apply to prospective advanced directives. And so that's something that I think we would need to iron out. In making a judgment about that, we have to take into consideration if the addition of psychiatric care would be a disincentive for some people to sign the document. If it is a disincentive, that would go contrary to what is right now a national policy of encouraging people to talk to their doctors about end-of-life planning and make a decision one way or the other about how they want to handle that. And so I don't think that we want to be creating any other disincentives. One way to address that type of disincentive would be to give people the option of including that or not including that in their directive. There are provisions in the directive law that allow people to include certain things or exclude certain things. That option is not provided for in this bill. Those are some of the technical concerns I have about it. It really isn't about the major principle, which I absolutely agree with, that we need to be bringing mental health into the broader healthcare discussion. But I think that there are some particulars about the bill that I have concerns about.
Thank you. Any questions of anyone on this panel? All right. Thank you very much. With that, we will close the
panel. May I make a comment before you close? Thank you. First of all, about doing it in the interim, we announced this in the healthcare committee of 2009 that we were going to, that I was going to move forward this, and I met with Mr. Jondoff on at least a couple of occasions to talk about the issue. And I think putting it off to another interim, I don't think is very useful. If we want to kill it, kill it. But I also like to relate specifically to the point that people now expect when they sign this healthcare power of attorney or advanced directive, that they expect it to exclude mental health treatment. And I subscribe that that's nonsense. I mean, I've done it, and several of my friends have done it, and we can stop 20 people out on the street and ask if this differentiates between admission to a mental health for a mental health condition and admission for a physical health condition, and I would wager none of them believes that when they give their representatives the authority to admit them, they do not have the authority to admit them if they have a mental health condition. I think it's an easy empirical question. I mean, yes, we could put in You can't be admitted for spinal surgery. You can't be admitted for congestive heart failure. You can't be admitted for the behavioral effects of cognitive impairment. But we don't. We say we trust the person that we're giving the decision-making power to. I mean, the days that somebody puts away their wayward wife without their permission and keeps them in a mental institution is long gone. But the fact is, this is me giving somebody the right to make healthcare decisions for me, and I should have that right, unimpaired, to give somebody else that authority. And that's all. That's essentially all this bill does. So I would hope we do move it forward, Madam Chair, and it seems to me it's a fair and appropriate thing to do.
Thank you, Representative.
The way it is now.
Yeah, I would prefer to.
Good move.
Is there anything on this bill? I assume you're talking about something else or about this.
We were discussing this bill.
Okay. Do you want to
agree with Representative Greenleck on this? One of the issues.
We're in public hearing.
Well, just to comment
ahead.
On his
sure,
comment.
Sure.
I think having this clause is an impediment to for people to get appropriate mental health treatment. In a lot of these kind of things, while we're dithering around trying to figure out how to do something, because of this kind of prohibition, is time wasted when we could be getting mental health treatment for somebody who needs it. And I support his contention that this is a good idea, and we, as with anything, we proceed with caution. But I think not doing this is a poor idea.
Okay, Gripson and Harper.
Thanks.
I know. You're in my other committee. I know.
Thank you. And my point that we were having here quietly, just that I understand the concerns you raise. Yeah. But I tend to align myself with the arguments made by Representative Greenleck as well. So thanks for raising those, and I think we may well have to address them at some point, but I think we're good.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Wyden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Representative Greenleck would entertain some of the amendments that you addressed, would you be supportive of this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Wyden, yes, I would.
We would also, Madam Chair.
I don't accept those amendments. I don't think they're friendly amendments, and I think the notion of putting on a form that it's okay to be admitted for diagnosis number 143 through 195 simply doesn't make sense. I think these are just medical conditions, as I'm sure Bob agrees. And if we're going to put these medical conditions and say, yes, they have my permission or not. And these, I would say, well, what other conditions do you want to put on that I wouldn't allow my spouse to make a decision about? I think they confuse the issue, and I don't think they're helpful at all.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Health Bill 2375. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2325. Oh, you already gave it, right. Okay. Let's see. Sir Representative Riley, thank you.
Wait,
what? Okay.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Chuck Riley, former representative, and the sponsor of this, original sponsor of this bill. I wanted to bring up Detective Smith with me, Detective Matt Smith from the Forest Grove Police Department. This was his idea. He brought it to me, and he's done a lot of work. It's his beat. The elder abuse is what he one of his charges in the police department, and he's seen some things. I want to turn this over to him, if that's okay, to give his testimony, and I'd like to make a couple of comments at the end.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, first of all, let me thank each and every one of you. My name is Matt Smith. I'm a detective with the Forest Grove Police Department. and I want to thank all of you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today. I've had a unique opportunity since my assignment as a detective to investigate elder abuse cases. In April of 2010, I attended the Clackamas County Child Abuse Summit that was sponsored by the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, and I was presented with the case of Carly Sheehan, who was brutally murdered in Corvallis, Oregon, and during the course of this case study became Carly's Law, as it was explained to us. But what I was struck by was how purely preventable this homicide was. And as I was in the middle of this case presentation, I was struck by the parallels on elder abuse cases, because currently we don't really have any guidelines that investigators are to follow when they respond and find suspicious injuries on a senior citizen. This bill requires law enforcement people to document and photograph fractures, broken bones, multiple different injuries, contusions, disfigurements. A lot of these requests in the bill are common sense issues, but common sense is simply not common. During my course recently, I attended a program that was put on by the Department of Homeland Security in Austin, Texas, on elder abuse. During the course of this course, I learned that the state of Texas recently investigated their fifth boiling death of a senior citizen in a care facility. Now, as I was hearing this information, I thought this could never occur in the state of Oregon. We're too good for that. We're too squared away. We have too good of investigators. Upon coming back to the state of Oregon, I investigated an injury at a nursing facility in Forest Grove where a heating pad was left on a woman for over 12 hours. It melted her flesh. And within a span of about 2 to 3 weeks, she subsequently died of her injuries. This care facility knew that this was a criminal investigation. They knew that I wanted updates on her status, but her body was sent to a funeral home and was due to be cremated within hours. It was by a vigilant adult protection service worker who learned that she lived, this woman had died. I had to make phone calls and find out where the body was at, locate it, stop it from being cremated, and have a Washington County medical examiner go out and examine the body to verify that her cause of death was not related to these burns that she suffered at the nursing facility. Now, to use an overdramatic example of a boiling death in Texas has relevance here because I believe Texas is a barometer of what we can expect here in Oregon as the baby boomers are due to retire. We're going to see more potential neglect, abuse, and victimization of senior citizens, and we have to have protocols in place for us to follow to ensure that we properly investigate these cases. I recently have had 5 different cases where I've had net losses of $150,000. 3 of my 5 victims have died, all of them before their cases can be formally prosecuted. These victims are silent victims, and I think it is imperative that we in law enforcement investigate these cases and have protocols that we follow, including taking pictures, documenting injuries, collaborating with adult protection services, and ensuring that we never have a case presentation in Oregon where I'm sitting in a room with about 100 other investigators looking at autopsy photos of a senior citizen, and we're asking ourselves the same questions that I was asking myself in this case study. Why didn't we do more? Why didn't we pick up on the warning signs when this senior citizen was being brutalized, was being repeatedly raped or physically assaulted to the point where they died? One of the reasons why I contacted Representative Riley was I thought that we in law enforcement can step forward and put forth a proactive bill that we don't have to name after a crime victim. We can do it before it happens. And I'm asking for all of your help. I'm somebody who investigates elder abuse on a daily basis, and I understand that there are amendments that have been offered to this bill. I support the bill in its current form because I don't want to see senior citizens be victimized anymore. And I worry that if we do form a task force, the composition of the task force and who will comprise it. If this committee decides not to pass this bill in its current form, I plead with all of you to be vigilant in who you appoint to this task force and make sure that you put people on the task force that are from law enforcement that are passionate about elder abuse, that are boots on the ground, that work elder abuse every single day, and are experts in their field. Because I believe we don't have time to waste on this, and I don't want to see a case presentation where we have a dead senior citizen. My chief of police couldn't be here today. He's aware that I'm testifying today, neither can my sergeant. They have other obligations. But I want to thank the committee for their time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking the time to testify. We certainly feel that this is an extremely important issue. Since most of us, if not all of us, hopefully will be senior citizens one day, we'd like that our lives be protected also.
Yes,
thank you.
Sure.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, former Representative Riley again. So I slipped there. But I just wanted to say I've read the amendment, and I think that I agree with what Representative Thompson said about the last bill, that we shouldn't be dithering around. that this is a bill that needs to be passed now, although, you know, you may not do that, and if you don't, I certainly agree that we need to do something, and the amendment is better than nothing. But I think that, you know, this is a situation that we have now where every day that we wait could be someone's life. And I believe that we should pass this bill in its unamended form at this time and go forward. Thank you for your time, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Representative Thompson.
I agree with what you're saying. I used to be an ambulance medic and saw a number of cases that were suspicious that we referred to law enforcement. Of course, you never know exactly what happens to them. But I think the problem is much bigger right now than what we admit.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the victims are people who are really, they're senile, probably not a very good word, but they're not really able to speak for themselves. But I found oftentimes the explanations given by people around them weren't consistent with the evidence on the individual from a medical standpoint. And you know, you just get this sense that something's been going on that's being covered up, and I think it's happening a lot.
Right, and I believe that that's the case as well, and that's one of the things in this bill is the ability for those people who are being abused by their protectors,
mm-hmm.
Their supposed protectors, may be removed. That can't be done now.
Yeah, I think this would go a long way toward educating all kinds of people that it is a problem and what to look for, and everybody would be more vigilant as a result of having a bill like this.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Riley, for putting all the time and energy into this. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming today. Mr. Representative and Co-Chair Gilliam is going to be presenting the amendment. Did you say anything about the amendment?
Yeah, just... Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Vic Gilliam from House District 18, Silverton, Molalla. I want to talk about the Dash 2s that I'm bringing forward that do, in fact, as we say in the building, gut and stuff. But before I do that, I want to first apologize to my former colleague and current friend, Chuck Riley. If we failed in our communication about this bill, because I'm very glad you're here, and I'm sorry if we didn't get all the information out to you. But I am not sorry that you came, and I'm certainly not sorry that the detective came, because the focus here is elder abuse, to the points that the chair just made and the vice chair just made. Regarding the Dash 2s, I want to thank my co-chair for letting me hijack her bill, but I'm hijacking it for a good purpose. And... let's just quickly review the Oregonian article that started with the research in August is much of the reason that we're here now, and it's horrifying. I don't think we should legislate based on articles, but it was a very thorough sort of treatment of just how bad tip of the iceberg really this problem is, and I know everybody in this room and everybody on the panel is concerned about that. I'm mindful that the department is working on this issue, cooperated with the Oregonian, and is taking a positive step in their own task force, a task force that will function while we are still in session and end right about the time we end. So this idea is not to put this issue off and not to dither, but rather say, let's support the task force and the work that the department is doing. Let's dovetail with that, and I think if you look at the amendment, you'll see that this task force dovetails with their work, but I think rightfully keeps legislative oversight in place, but there won't be any gap between the two task forces. In fact, having talked with the director who's here with us today, I think we see an opportunity for great cooperation. I'll look forward to her testimony in just a moment with my apologies for her to have to wait to the end of our meeting. And also, I believe there's a couple of other folks on the list, including the ombudsman for this area. But The task force borrows from one we earlier passed out. I just want to point this out to you. And I think it's a very, it's not just a clever, it's a practical way around the fiscal. And that's the task force that we approved for, I believe it's guardianship, if I'm right on the subject, that Representative Dembro brought forward. And it simply states that you cannot be reimbursed for your per diem and so forth and so on, so that the cost of the task force is not going to be an issue, and we have the fiscal. The speakers are ready to sign a letter following this if we end up passing my amendment. And let's move this out today. Hear the testimony. Let's go to work. I would say one last thing. When I hear the passion that the detective has for this issue, in my way of thinking, if you look on, I think it's Section C of the amendment on the first page, Detective Smith may have just given us his nomination for that post. That won't be my decision to make, but he's exactly the kind of person that I'm hoping to get the input from on this task force. So I'm again grateful for the spotlight that they have placed on this. I hope that we can pass my amendment and continue to move forward on a very serious issue that we all care very much about. I am open to questions, but I think you'll probably want to move on and have the director come as well as the ombudsman.
Any question of the co-chair? Thank you very much. Also signed up would be Erin Kelly Seal and Lauren Rhodes, and I think that's it. Is there anyone else who is wanting to speak on this?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Welcome.
Good morning. Members of the committee, co-chairs, for the record, Erin Kelly Seal, Acting Director of the Department of Human Services. I'm here today to testify in support of the Dash 2 amendment specifically and comment on, follow up on Representative Gilliam's comments with respect to his proposal for a legislatively convened and driven oversight body on the issue of elder abuse. I want to thank the representative for his interest and commitment to this issue. It's an important one. It's a priority for the agency. We are taking several immediate steps that began with my tenure as acting director. And actually, I think to be fair, many people have been working on this issue for a long time. I can actually remember having participated in one of my previous jobs with the previous governor on a task force focusing on elder abuse, and there were advancements made. So over the course of the last decade, Oregon has made progress in this area, but I think it's clear to everybody that there's more progress for us to make, that it's got to be a priority for us to come together around a comprehensive agenda that focuses on strengthening both the role of the state but also our ability to work cooperatively with law enforcement and prosecutors so that crimes against vulnerable people can be prosecuted. Some of the immediate steps that we've taken are to close a gap that the last Legislative Assembly had identified with respect to the information that we have internally within the agency focused on some of the most egregious abuse against people served in licensed care settings, and allowing that information of substantiated abuse incidents to be used as part of the criminal background check process. That will become available as part of our process starting April 15th. It's been under discussion by this legislative body for quite a while, but there hasn't been the resource to support some of the due process issues that people who are employed in these facilities, against whom some of these substantiated findings have been made, are entitled to, because these kinds of reviews will affect their employment. So we are working within existing resources to implement incrementally this idea that the legislative body has given us authority to implement before now, and we look forward to continuing that conversation through this work group and task force process. We've also made a commitment to create for you the kind of report that we currently create for you on the child abuse side, which is an annual report reflecting back for you more comprehensively data and information regarding abuse and neglect of seniors, people with physical disabilities, and people with developmental disabilities. We started along that path following the passage of House Bill 2442 that Representative Gelser sponsored, and we did produce a report for you this session on some specific issues regarding persons with developmental disabilities and the people who serve them, training, turnover, incidents of abuse, et cetera. But it's our commitment that you will now annually receive a comprehensive report that looks at this issue more globally and gives you good information for decision-making and us good information for conversation around our priorities in this area. And as the representative noted, we also did then initiate immediately our own adult safety and protection team, which kicks off Monday, April 25th, includes a law enforcement representative, but I'd be happy to add another, and a district attorney, as well as consumers, members of our commissions. In fact, the work group aligns pretty well with the proposed -2 amendments to House Bill 2325. We've invited the speakers and the president to appoint legislative members to that safety team with the knowledge that you all are actively at work most hours of most days and that it would be difficult for you to participate during the legislative session. So in my conversation with Representative Gilliam, we discussed the opportunity we had to hand off this body of work, which we've given ourselves 90 days to complete in terms of phase one, which is a focus on licensed care settings, to hand that off to this group that's created by the -2 amendments so that there can be additional time spent and focus on developing the consensus that's needed for whatever legislation might be required. It's our interest, though, and our belief that there are steps we can and should take now that don't require legislative action, and that's the reason that we've created for ourselves timelines that allow us to finish and complete phase one of the work by July 1, just about the time that you hope to sign EDI. So I thank you very much for the opportunity to have more conversation with you. We've also committed to the co-chairs that midway through this process, we would be happy to have the Adult Safety and Protection Team and some of its members come and provide a report to you on progress that we've made. We have a work plan already. We're engaging national consultants in this effort so that we can learn from other states and where they've seen progress, where they've struggled. And also we're taking all of the previous work that's been done in Oregon and trying to put it in one place so that we can comprehensively provide you with descriptions of the system, how it works today, where the gaps are, how we would propose to close those gaps, and have a thoughtful, very comprehensive conversation that's proactively led by us. And I couldn't agree more with the detective. We want to be doing this in front of bad outcome cases that get the headlines, although one victim is one too many, and certainly we know there are victims of abuse currently that are being served, and we want to make sure that we can do more in this area and prioritize it.
Thank you. And can we expect to hear from you before we sign EDI sometime in, hopefully in June? Would that be possible?
Madam Co-Chair, yes, we would be happy to come back and report out on the progress that has been made.
That would be perfect. Thank you. Lauren, any questions of Aaron before we move on? All right. Thank you. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Lauren Rhodes representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. We have over 500 members who are directly discussed, I think, in some of the comments Aaron has made, as well as the proposed -2 amendments, long-term care facilities who provide care to seniors and vulnerable individuals in Oregon. And we are very supportive of the concept included in the -2 amendments and the task force, as well as the work group convened by the department, and we will be participating in that. And would like to offer our support for this task force and especially inclusion of legislative involvement in this very important issue. I think this is something that we work on at the provider community, but having more knowledge and investment on the behalf of you elected officials will be really critical to making sure that we cover all of the important concepts that need to be moved forward in any proposal that comes forth in 2012. So thank you for your interest in this, and we fully support the -2 amendments.
Thank you, Lauren.
Madam Co-Chair, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon, speaking in support of the -2 amendments. The well-being and safety of our elderly, particularly as it pertains to physical abuse and financial exploitation, is an ongoing concern for AARP. We were very active in advocating at the federal level on this issue. Our Public Policy Institute provides updated research on a regular basis related to best practices occurring across the country. Here in Oregon, we have been and continue to be very supportive of the Ombudsman Program and have participated in work groups in the past on this issue. The director has asked AARP to participate in the work group that she has just established, and we are eager to do so. And we see the task force being established by the Dash 2 amendments as being complementary and an ongoing process on this issue. I think you'll note that from the in subsection 2, the different areas that the task force is asked to study and make recommendations on is certainly comprehensive, and I think also suggests that that in fact this issue of abuse of the elderly is one of some complexity and is deserving of a deliberative and thoughtful process as we consider recommendations and where we go from here at this point. And so, again, we support the Dash 2 amendments and urge your support as well.
Thank you. Any questions of the panel at this point? Please, Representative Parrish.
I just have one. It's for the director. And I know you weren't here when the issues in the Oregonian came out that was not under your watch. So I appreciate that you snapped to it right away and actually actively going to go out and try and solve the problems. But I guess the kind of how did it get that bad that we didn't, somebody else didn't notice?
Co-chairs, Representative Parrish, I think it's important to have perspective with respect to the focus of the article. It is a very serious, the article's focus was on the sexual abuse of the elderly in facilities. And although, as I said earlier, this is a very serious and critical issue, one is one too many. Just for perspective, about 50,000 Oregonians are served annually in licensed long-term care provider settings. That's inclusive also of adult foster homes. And as the article reported, on average, there are about 5 cases per year of rape or inappropriate sexual conduct. That's about 0.01% of the population served. So I just want to put that scope in perspective. Certainly too many, not acceptable for us as a standard as Oregonians, and of course any of us who have loved ones who are older or who are struggling with a disability who would need that kind of care wouldn't want our loved one to be that one case. So that is why we take it very seriously. I think we have made one of the things we hope to bring to you as part of a report is the timeline, the storyline of the work that has been done in Oregon, better trend data about whether this is actually increasing, decreasing. As was noted earlier, we are looking ahead to an increased need for services in long-term care facilities in Oregon, and I think we have an opportunity right now to put in place some really key and strong protocols and become a national leader in this area. Because we've been working with the national consultants. We've been learning about some places where we're weaker, some places where we're stronger, and I think that's why it's important for us to take this comprehensive look and be sure that we're acting in every way that we can.
Any further questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This whole thing, I mean, it makes me sick what was going on. And I'm sitting here listening to it and task force and everything. I mean, there's some stuff we need to start doing to absorb this. I mean, I sit in economic development and listen to people tell me how cheap our power rates are. I disagree with that when a family's making $50,000, but I think this is when people are abusing elderly in the manner that it's been happening, we need to start firing up the electric chair and let them know that this is not tolerated in Oregon. Something more than a task force needs to happen here because it's wrong and needs to stop immediately in the state. So I would hope we would be coming out with something very quick to address this and deal with people that are doing these kind of sick things to our seniors. And that's just an opinion.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Can I make a final comment?
Yes, you may. I see other people in the audience, and I'm not sure why you're here. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this bill, or if there's anything else you were here for? If you'd let me know, pass staff a note. We've got a few minutes, and we could hear from you on any other issues.
We're going to open up the hearing on the work session on 2375.
I'll deal with that.
Yeah. Very, very quickly, Madam Chair. Again, Chuck Riley. I just wanted to comment that the amendment appears to only address the licensed facilities, and the last four of the last five of Detective Smith's cases were not in that kind of facility. They were in private homes, and we need to act quickly on those situations. That was just my final comment, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Parker.
Thank you. Thanks for coming up and making that statement. Should I interpret that as less opposition to the amendments than I have heard previously?
No. What it is I know you're going to pass the amendment, and I want to make sure that somehow that gets the attention of whoever this task force is, that it's not just institutions that we need to look at. I've been around. I know the writing on the wall. This is going to pass, and we're going to have that amendment passed. I want to make sure that the people on that task force have heard that it's not just institutions that we need to look at. Thank you.
Yes, Aaron. Thank you.
Co-chairs, for the record, Aaron Kelly Seal. I want to support what the former representative has raised and just add a clarification to my earlier testimony. The safety team that we're convening is actually dividing its work into three phases or three bodies of work. The first phase, which will be complete by July 1, 2011, will focus on abuse in licensed care settings, and specifically looking at the abuse of elders and people with physical disabilities. The second phase, which I've asked to be complete by September 1, focuses on the abuse of the elderly and people with physical disabilities in communities, in other words, in their own homes. And a parallel conversation, we have asked Catherine White from the Developmental Disability Council to sit on the group as well, so that we can ensure that the work that's been done before now to strengthen our efforts around persons with developmental disabilities who are incredibly vulnerable and suffer abuse at very high rates is not weakened in any way by the conversation that's focused on our seniors and our persons with physical disabilities, but is also strengthened in the process, and anything we can learn from those cross conversations we're learning. One of the things that I've learned in the process of just putting this group together and inviting people to be part of it is that these different, as Mr. Bennett said earlier, these different populations have different complexities that are associated with them. For example, people's right to self-determination. One of the stories that I had been told, actually, by a member of the legislative body was about concerns they had raised to our adult protection staff with respect to one of their own family members who was living in his own home on his own property, and the concern was that that individual was self-neglecting, in other words, not caring for himself in such a way that he was compromising his own safety. These are complex issues when you have adults who are making decisions about their own lives, they're living in their own homes, and those are sometimes different issues than, for example, somebody who has power over another individual who is then abusing them, either physically, financially, exploiting them, et cetera. So part of the conversation, I think, in our charge for you is to bring to light some of those complexities, some of the distinctions between the different places where we should expect people to be safe when we're paying for their care and that we're licensing their caregivers, versus some of the complexity around people living in their own homes and making decisions, and then also making sure that the uniqueness of the different population is also being addressed as well. So I just want to make sure that full spectrum and continuum was clear about the work the department has commissioned.
Thank you very much. Aaron. Any other questions? All right, with that, we will close the public hearing. on House 2325. Open up a work session on House Bill 2325.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move House Bill 2325 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
And, Representative, do you mean to do that with the original bill?
Yes.
Representative Widener moves House Bill 2325 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to vote against that motion. I hope I've made it clear in my dash two amendments that my intent here is not to have just another task force, but to come up with tangible and real solutions, legislative concepts for this body in February, including the original bill and the concepts and the testimony that we were given by the detective and our former colleague. So I will be voting against this because I believe, for the reasons I've already stated, I'd be happy to repeat them, that we need to have this kind of legislative oversight, given the importance of the issue, given the awareness recently because of the media, and given the work that was just described to us, the complete work that was just described to us by the team. I keep calling theirs a task force, but it's the team that the director has brought together. So it is my intention not to vote for this, and to urge you to, as soon as I have the opportunity,
Madam Chair,
as soon as I have the opportunity, to move the dash twos.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Wagner.
I will rescind my motion, knowing that our co-chair is adamantly about overseeing this and making sure things happen, but this is something that we really need to address, and that's why I made the motion, just to throw it out there that we need to take this serious, and I want the department to know that I'm very serious about them getting things cleaned up, and judiciary needs to be looking at this very closely as well. So I will rescind my motion and be happy to support the dash two amendment.
Thank you. Is that all we need to do? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2325, dated 4/11/11.
Chair Gilliam moves to adopt the dash two amendments, dated 4/11. Any discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative.
I just wanted to say I was prepared to support the original motion and the dash twos. Seems to me the original motion doesn't get in the way of whatever the department wants to do. But I'm also happy to support the dash two amendments.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, if you will entertain another motion, then I move House Bill 2325 as just amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Chair Gilliam moves House Bill 2325 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any discussion?
Yes.
I thank Representative Widener for being bold and throwing it out there that we should be putting forward bills that have teeth and not just fluffy task force bills. I think we've seen a lot of those. And so I'll support this if it's going to have the teeth. But I'm a little frustrated this session by bills that aren't doing what we need them to do. Which is the boots on the ground, giving people, like in law enforcement or giving foster parents or whatever it is, the tools we need to get them to do the work that they need to do for the people. So I appreciate Representative Widener throwing it out there, and I'll support this, but I'd like to see us come back in a subsequent session and start having bills that have teeth to them and spur action and not just another report for me to file in my inbox. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, would you please call the roll?
Representative Weiser.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Friedman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Excused.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair William.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the floor. I will close the work session on House Bill 2325.
Sorry. Anyone to carry on?
And I will carry over the work session on House Bill 2375. Any other business? And I offered for people to come and speak, and our time is over.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm honored to carry this bill, co-carry this bill with you.
Okay.
What about Representative Parker? No? I don't care.
No.
Okay.
Even
Jim?
Okay. With that, I will close the House.
Because everybody's leaving here.